Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Tune in later today on 94.9 The Fan for the Nashville Sounds taking on Durham with first pitch at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us in about 30 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on all things NFL. TD at 8:15 today. Moved him back 15 minutes, but he'll be with us on the program at 8:15 to look ahead to the Titans and the Falcons coming tonight in preseason game number two. We'll take your thoughts on that in the meantime. 615-737-1025. Joe, Titans president and CEO Burke Nihil has been making the rounds as of late, discussing some developments with the new stadium, and he was on the broadcast last week in preseason game number one between the Buccaneers and the Titans, and he talked about, you know, some of the renovation or some of the developments that are going on with the new stadium and kind of his thoughts on what the tickets are going to look like and all these different things. And he sat down with Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports as well. And, you know, he's used this phrase a lot recently, Joe, which is, you know, discussing the new stadium, quote, think Paradise Park meets ESPN Zone, and trying to describe, like, what the experience and the viewing experience is going to be like for fans and the different things they've got to do. And he's talked about, like, the different, like, luxury items that they're going to have and how much space is going to be there and all these different things. So, with that in mind, you know, he talks about a lot of that again in a piece at A to Z Sports that Easton Freeze put out there last week about the stadium and all those things. But there are a couple things in here that Burke Nihil said that caught your attention. What stood out to you about this interview that A to Z Sports did with Burke Nihil?
Well, look, I think it's a good job by Easton Freeze. Good idea to get Burke Nihil and go through some of this stuff. I wanted to do something on this. I heard DVD talking about it earlier this week, and I read the story last week, and I think it was the same day as the, or maybe it was the day before the Bucs preseason game. And then Nihil went on the game broadcast and said basically the exact same stuff. And I must say, first of all, you know, you talk about, you know, Paradise Park meets what, ESPN Zone.
Yeah.
I don't, The ESPN Zone part of that is like whatever, but Paradise Park, my God, I miss that place.
Good
I
spot.
Love that place. I forget who the loser is who replaced it. Oh man, the tater tots, the bacon cheeseburger, the soaked beer on the and the carpeting. You know, I mean, that place was amazing. So I'm all for that. There's a lot of interesting stuff in here. And look, we've talked a lot about the whole idea of the antiseptic corporate atmosphere that's possible, the possibility, of course, of a continuation, frankly, of big fan bases buying out a lot of seats. I mean, look, I think that has a fair amount to do with the actual product on the field as things move forward. But, you know, some good stuff in here that, you know, first of all, Burt Nihil told Easton that he had $60 million in PSL credits.
Yep.
To invite them along. That's a lot of credits. That sounds like it's a big number. Again, the numbers, if you go through the whole stadium, are gigantic, I assure you. So he makes this reference a couple times, and this is the only thing that really bothered me. I want to do this segment because I'd like people to weigh in who have had experiences. DVD had – they had people complaining. They had people saying, actually, I thought it was, you know, I mean, it was, I knew it was going to go up, but it wasn't crazy. And I stuck with them. And so that's what you want to hear. But Nihil says, here's a quote. It says, quote, to give you some very specific data points on dispelling the idea that this building is not for our core fan. Even once we decided to kind of bring pricing to what was something that felt right to us, which meant PSLs as low as $750, which was not something that our consultants were recommending. They still expected that based on past dating work they'd done, maybe 40 to 50% of current season ticket members would come over to the current building, end quote. He made that reference a couple times to, you know, the consultants told us we should do this, and we said, no, 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 we are not going to do that. Sorry, I'm having trouble talking today. This is one of those things, like, if you're someone in a situation like this, you just, like, type something in, like, have AI tell you, like, to do something ridiculous. Say, my advisor said I should do this, and I am doing something for the people. I would advise anyone in that place, because when you say stuff like that, like, most people know that you're just straight up gaslighting them.
Yep.
Okay. So that bothered me. I think that like Burke also talks about how he's having his family that they're going to be in the upper deck. One thing I totally believe is that the uppers, and this is obviously smaller capacity, but the uppers at this stadium will be way better than at current Nissan.
Yes.
Right. And these stadiums are built to where they really have taken out just the terrible, terrible sight lines that older stadiums have. So I buy that for sure. I think it's again, a worthwhile story. You don't need to tell us about your consultants. We're telling you this or that, because it just, people are just going to immediately roll their eyes at that. But I came away from this, I guess, feeling a little better about at least the idea that some people have gotten a decent deal out of this. Like, you can't expect, you have to know prices are going up. You have to understand that. That's the reality. It's like when we talk about the Thompson Bowling Arena and stuff like that. Like, I do think you should make exceptions, and you should grandfather in people as much as possible, especially with college programs, when you're talking way more time and decades. But also, this is big business, and there's a reality to it.
Well, you brought up the, Burke Nihil talked about 60 million in PSL credits, and he said, I think later in that quote, that wildly exceeds what the projections were and that they're happy about it. We've had the conversation with PK, really over the last year, about the stadium and how sales were going and what that looked like. And PK has been pretty consistent the whole time of, like, the Titans are saying that sales are going well and that they're feeling really good about it, which I know some people have heard that, and the feedback that we've got from that is, well, how can that be? Like, our experience is it's really expensive to upgrade and to get into the new stadium, and the team's awful. So how is that? And we've talked about, like, really wanting to avoid as much as possible, an antiseptic environment in the new stadium where it's just totally corporate, and it feels like you're at a Toronto Maple Leafs game out there, and there I'm not sure how many actual fans are in the building, and it's just a bunch of corporate people. So you don't want that, and I don't think you're going to get too much of that. But that number, I saw that, 60 million in PSL credits, and you look at, the 70% number that they're pacing at into PSL, renewals and all that stuff. I will say, like, when I see those numbers, Joe, that is probably better than I expected it to be, given everything that's going on around the football team and then the prices involved in some cases in the new stadium as well.
Yeah, and Kaharsky, even a while ago, was talking about, he thought that things were going better than some people believed, and that they would, again, that, like, they're going to these tickets. It just comes down to how many of these tickets are bought by people who either are Titans fans who are getting in on it now,
yep,
or, again, a lot of his retention, and then how many of them are basically going to be up for grabs, and you're going to have corporate seats. You're going to have a lot of that anyway. You're going to have a lot of ticket brokers who have a lot of seats. What percentage of it do they have? And again, those are the people who then are going to sell them to the Bills fans when they, when the Bills come to town, the Steelers, yeah, fans, or the Steelers come to town, et cetera, et cetera. So reading this, it sounds like they have a chance to have a good atmosphere, a decent amount of Titans fans in your average game.
Well, here's the other thing that stood out to me. Like, we've all been to Nissan Stadium, and most of the time when I've been, Joe, it's been in the upper deck. We used to have season tickets in the upper deck, and I kind of like watching football games in the upper deck just because you can see the whole field and all that stuff. Anyway, he had this quote, if you're in current Nissan Stadium, it gets crowded in those concourses. Like, if you have to go to the bathroom or you're going to buy a beer or whatever, like, you can pretty much count on missing like half a quarter. Like, it's basically how it's been, depending on what you're doing. And this is what Burke Nihil said again in an interview with Easton Freeze from A to Z Sports. Quote, "The seats, 38% closer to the field than the current stadium, twice as many bathrooms up there. It'll be twice as easy to go get food and beverages because of the frictionless markets, and the terrace is right outside." So I think once people actually start to experience it, these myths of, quote, they're pricing us out, they don't care about us, the team is moving on. No, the team is moving forward. The team is taking a step into where we think this team belongs relative to the National Football League and what our fans deserve. That's what Burke Nihil had to say about that.
Yeah. Look, the NFL, all these owners are greedy sons of guns. So, I mean, that's the reality. So you can always do that too. You can always point to, but yeah, if you look around the rest of the league, there's some places that are charging way more than we are. So, you know, it's like, okay, well, it doesn't make it right. Robert says, "I just don't see how the regular Joe is going to be able to go to the games. It's been the backbone of support of this franchise since day one in the new stadium. It's just too much." Well, look, then this is, you take that beyond, I guess you could really take this to a big picture and say, like, it's hard, like, it's expensive to do anything anymore. Incredibly, it's absurd. But yeah, I think regular fans have been priced out of sporting events at an insane rate in the last 25 years, you know, maybe a little more than that. That's the way it has gone. If you're running that business, you realize that the more luxury things you offer, there are people with money who will actually give you ridiculous sums of money so that they can have their, you know, their special experience. So, but my whole thing is you should, and all these teams say they do, and some do it better than others. You still need to, like, have young families coming to your games. You need, like, there's all, again, it's a big picture. It's like college sports. Like, hey, well, we can get better rights fees now if we put, you know, we put USC and Oregon in the Big Ten. Think of those TV deals. It's like, yeah, but, like, you want fans for the next generation too. You want there to be, you want to create fandom, and you want to create loyalty and passion. And if it's only rich people and corporate seats at these stadiums, I think that's going to be harder to do.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on the new stadium and some of the comments from Burke Nihil. We'll do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. This September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinetics' Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets at rockthecradlenashville.org. Charles Robinson will be with us here in just over 10 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on all things NFL. Taking your thoughts on the Titans in the new stadium, some of the comments that Burke Nihil made with A to Z Sports last week. 615-737-1025. Wes in Clarksville says, "All that is BS. We got to pay $12 for hot dogs, $15 for a beer. It should already be better than it was." That part is interesting, Joe, because I don't know that that's going anywhere anytime soon, like the concession prices. I wondered when Atlanta, which I guess ties into tonight's game, when they opened their new stadium and they went the other way on concession prices, and it was like, yeah, let's make concessions, you know, pretty reasonable out there. Would that be a trend? It has not been a trend throughout the rest of sports lore when they've opened up all these things. We'll see exactly what it looks like when the Titans come around here. But, I mean, look, I'm still getting over some sticker shock at Disney World for all this food we just paid for a couple of weeks ago. Like, I think that's just the way of the world right now.
Yeah, I do like what they've done. And I am with you. I was like, maybe this will become a thing. Although, you know, even when that happened, to me, it's like, this stuff's always such a shell game. So it's like, yeah, we're going to cut down on this. And it's like, okay, so like they'll get you somewhere else, right? Yep. Like, it's like, they'll figure out a way. They will. Now, granted, it's different. It's different. I mean, for the vending people, it's like, geez, man, like, you know, I mean, those people, like a lot of these places have, especially in the stadium, some of these people have like there's like independent vendors who obviously count on a certain amount
Yeah.
of income,
You get a
but
hot dog at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for $2. I mean, can't beat that.
yeah, it's like if you're, especially if you're like someone's guest for their tickets, and it's like an amazing, you just show up and like, wow, I can actually eat for cheap. Whereas most stadiums, it's absolutely absurd. You get your first beer and it's like, well, I guess I'm this will be it today then, you know? So yeah, it's, again, it's just, it's crazy expensive when you add it all up. You add up parking and all that stuff for people to go to these. I think it's, again, I just think the, if you have a big picture view of this, you want people to experience this. I mean, if you're the Titans, you want people to experience the new stadium. I mean, I think the place is going to be amazing. I have no doubt about that. You look at the mock-ups, I think it's going to be, you know, for Titans games and for, you know, for concerts, for inevitably like the Final Four, probably a national championship game in college football, all these things. WrestleMania, you know, it'll be a great place. But is it, you know, do you have enough in place to retain fans and again help grow fans? I mean, every pro league is also just worried about like sports fandom in general
Yeah.
in society moving forward. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot of tentacles to that. But again, I think that the in-game experience, think about, I know for me, like the first time I walked into Tiger Stadium, you know, it's like it was like magic. I mean, those things, like you want people to be able to come to your venue and experience that. I think that's a big part of building fandom.
Man, I'm looking at this menu right now down there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. If you guys are wanting to go to the preseason game tonight, you can get in there and get you a nice, you know, a soda for $2, hot dog for $2, nachos for $3. It's like 1987. How about that?
That's wild. Is like, is Chick-fil-A cheaper too? Because they're actually
Well,
open.
I doubt that.
But
But yeah, they'd
you
be
could
open
go.
tonight. Lord, you may talk me into going to the Falcons Titans preseason game tonight.
Easton stick time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could go to Chick-fil-A and like get a chicken sandwich, and then you just go to the regular concession stand and get the cheap pop, right?
I don't know what that is, so I'm not going to dignify
You
that with a
don't know what
response.
a pop
With
is? It's
pop. Yeah.
short for soda pop.
Oh, okay.
That's the actual, that's what it's called. So yeah.
Soda. That's good.
Well, you call it soda or you call it pop. I go with pop. It's one less syllable, and I like to be efficient.
Unlimited refills, so one
Join
texter
me.
says. I don't know, man.
Really?
I don't know.
Unlimited
Apparently, I need to
refills.
get down to a Falcons game. We'll see how that
Yeah,
goes.
but again, and this is when you want to go. You want to go to a Falcons game, either like a preseason game like this or
When they're out of it.
the random Thursday or Monday. You
Yeah.
know, because I mean, yeah, the fact that their biggest days of the year have a dormant Chick-fil-A
Yeah.
sitting there is pretty funny.
That is pretty good on that front. A lot of people worrying about, you know, the opposing fan, right? And we've talked about that before. If when the new stadium comes, is it just going to be overrun with, you know, Bills fans and Patriots fans and all these different fan bases? We'll see. Like, look, I've said this before. I think for the first couple of years anyway, there's going to be just natural, like, people are going to want to go to Titans games around here just to see the new stadium, right? Like, beyond even the football part of it, they're going to want to go. Like, I'm curious. I want to go to a game in the new stadium just to see the new stadium. And then that goes on for a few years, and then that goes away, right? Like, the curiosity of the new stadium goes away, and then it becomes about, all right, how good is the football team? What sort of other events am I going to have access to if I buy season tickets? All these different things factor into the equation. But, you know, Nashville, I don't know that with the way our city is right now, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to fully escape, like, opposing fans wanting to come here and being willing to pay prices to get in the building. I don't know. Like, some places are just more susceptible to that, right? Like, Vegas, you're going to find a whole lot of opposing fans in the building at Vegas, right? It's a fun road city to go to. You know, Nashville and Vegas aren't exactly the same, but I think it's in the same category of, like, people like coming to Nashville. So I don't know that we're ever going to fully eliminate or really seriously mitigate the amount of opposing fans that are coming in.
No, it's going to be significant here. It's absolutely, and I think it's very comparable. I mean, what the bachelorette parties? Is it bachelor and bachelorette parties are more here than Vegas now? I know that there's some talk about Vegas struggling too, but
I know
no, it's going to
Bachelorette for
be,
sure. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, like Texter's asking, like, do you foresee the new stadium being taken over? What causes it to be taken over? Is it ticket brokers holding multiple PSLs or the same ticket brokers buying PSLs in the new stadium? I don't know what ticket brokers are doing. I know that if I were a ticket broker, I know a ticket broker actually in Michigan, and he has, you know, he's got all these Dodgers tickets. I mean, what they do is they go around and they try to project. I know a few years ago when the Blackhawks started getting good, he bought up a ton of Blackhawks tickets, and it was like, this is going to pay off. I promise you, if you're a ticket broker, you look at this place and you look at, like you said, just the fact that people love coming here and they want to see their football team. If you have it's a gold mine. It's a gold mine. So yeah, they buy PSLs. They absolutely, and they make their money tenfold on that. And that's not going to change, you know. Again, it's like, so you just, as a Titans fan who wants a great atmosphere for your team, you just want as many people who care about the Titans as possible to re-up with season tickets. And then even again, some of those people also, by the way, will still like sell off, right? Like one game a year and pay for everything else. I mean, that's just kind of, that's how it is. It's a blessing and a curse that here in Nashville, it's just magnified because people love to come here.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
What's going on, fellas? You'll have to excuse my voice. I'm a little still sick, so battling it out here in Jacksonville.
Man, you're just a warrior. You got you're still sick. Retro's laid up with gout. A lot of things going on here on the program.
It's been a month.
Iron Man.
It's been a month on the road now. Yeah, exactly. I think literally this is my seventh day in my fourth week. Joe, you're laid up with gout. What the heck, man?
Yeah, it's kind of a problem. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. It's just,
it's kind of a huge issue.
It just really sucks. Thanks.
Oh, man.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Hey, nobody said our late 40s/early 50s would be easy.
It's true. It's true.
That's right.
So, Charles, you rolled through Jaguars camp, which would be of high interest around here. Obviously, you know, the new regime in Jacksonville, division rival of the Tennessee Titans. So what kind of stood out to you about your experience with the Jaguars?
Yeah, it was an interesting day to be in with them because they did this, they did like a full intra-squad scrimmage. So it was like ones versus ones, twos versus twos, three versus threes. And, you know, it was meant to be intense. It was hot as hell. I mean, it was just, good God, it was brutal. And I live in Houston, and I'm like, man, this is terrible. It was interesting. They were, you know, it was sloppy. Like, it was very, the offense, I think there were 7 drops, double digit, like, penalties, whether it was like false starts or, you know, time violations. Like, it was, you could see they're still getting up to speed with Liam Cohen's offense. And, you know, just talking to people in the building, you know, Trevor's still, there's a learning curve there, and he's, you know, still picking things up. I thought it was interesting, you know, him, he said yesterday, he was talking about just sort of like his mechanics, and now it's getting to the point where he's not thinking anymore. Like, he went through this, you know, the idea of when he's in shotgun, which foot should be forward versus which should be back. And, you know, someone in the building said to me, you can see in terms of like looking at film from him last year to this year, you can see that his body mechanics, he's getting a little more disciplined. It's more compact, which is something is good to hear because that's really what Liam Cohen helped to do for Baker Mayfield. It was something very similar where it's just, you know, Trevor being tall and his arms being long, like long guys can kind of get a little loose in their throwing motion and then also the way they stand. And I think that's really been something that they've been working on. And, you know, watching Travis Hunter, I mean, he went both ways. They shuffled him in. He started with the DBs on the first team, and then eventually they moved him to wide receiver. He dove for a ball at one point, and wasn't able to make the catch, hit the ground really hard and laid there for a second. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like, man, I just watched an injury happen that cannot happen for these guys. He got up, he was fine, he shook it off. But I sat there and I thought about it, and I'm like, this to me is what brings to the forefront this idea of him playing, you know, so many snaps, is just the level of punishment that he's going to take on the NFL level that's going to be different than it was at Colorado. And I was talking to somebody in the building just about how, you know, they're game planning this, how they're working it out. They're sort of building, you know, laying the railroad track with them as they go. And they did agree that, look, the Colorado snap set, when you look at that data set, it's really not all that helpful. All that does is really tell NFL teams, hey, he has an opportunity to go to the next level and play both ways. But you can't read too much into it because the snaps are not – they're dissimilar to how it will go in the NFL, in especially when it comes to the punishment aspect. So really, they're building the data set now. They have no idea how many snaps he can play because they haven't gone through it yet, and they might not know until October, November. Then they'll get a better idea of what does this really truly look like for him enduring NFL punishment on both sides of the ball, and what will that do to how crisp he can run routes, how well he can tackle running backs, things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole thing with this is, and I'm a huge Travis Hunter fan. I think he's going to be a great player, but the NFL is so now about math and probabilities, right? Which is great. I mean,
right.
We've got full blown analytics staffs who are handing these, you know, these reports to coaches on everything's a probability. Like the injury rate of the NFL, isn't that just its own total deterrent to the entire idea? It's not going to go well to me because you're just, like you said, like you're trying to play at a high level at receiver and take those hits. And now, by the way, you need to set the edge over here and do that. It just doesn't, like, I don't think human beings in this league can do that.
Yeah. And I'll say too, I would discount. I know there's a lot of, you get a lot of these, well, players are saying, well, he's stronger and he has more endurance than anybody I've ever seen. He doesn't get tired. You know, I would discount those quotes because what are players going to say? Of course, like they're going to lean into this idea that he's an Iron Man, and that's great, but he's also young, right? And it's just like with running quarterbacks, it's a diminishing return over a long enough continuum. If that's a big part of their game, you got to believe going both ways is going to be a diminishing return at some point along the continuum, and that will get heavily factored when an injury occurs. And I'll bring up Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, Shohei Ohtani, amazing both ways. Then he hurts his elbow. And all of a sudden the Dodgers are like, maybe this pitching thing is something we need to kind of really pull back on. Maybe that is going to have to be a more diminished part of his game than the offense, right? And I think you'll probably see that at some point with Travis Hunter. And I think people are not realistic about the conversations that will happen in the building too along the way. Because if you get into a critical game, and let's say he's playing – let's just go ahead and we'll buy into this idea of him doing the entire Colorado experience. Let's say he's in the 80th or 90th snap, right? And you're in a critical spot in the fourth quarter, and you get a running back who comes off the edge, and he's got to come up and tackle the guy, and you get a Pittsburgh situation with Caleb Johnson where we saw him miss that one, right? Well, let's say he misses in a critical situation, a touchdown scored, the game is lost. You don't think the defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator head coach are going to have a powwow about, okay, how effective is he now at this point, at this, you know, this snap count? Because you might get a DC who's like, hey, man, why don't you just give him to me for 50 snaps and stop screwing around on the other side of the ball, and the guy's fresh and he makes that tackle or he makes that interception or he boxes out the receiver. Conversely, you could have the offensive coordinator who's like, give him to me for 50 snaps and quit screwing around on defense. And he makes the critical catch and doesn't drop it, or he's able to fight, you know, for a 50-50 ball in the end zone. I do think that those conversations are likely to happen at some point where there's an assessment by two guys who are worrying about their landscape, their territory, my offense, my defense, and they're going to get a little greedy and say, and maybe rightfully greedy, and say, we need to focus more with him on this side of the ball. And real quick, the plan, I will say, for the Jaguars, it's interesting. This idea that it's going to be some static number where it's like, oh, 30 and 30, you know, split it down the middle or whatever, it's not going to be static. I think it'll be very situational. So you could see some games where if you're the Titans and you're going in, you're saying, oh, okay, we're going to prepare to see Travis Hunter, you know, 40 snaps on offense, 40 on defense or whatever, you know, or just have that in your mind that that's how it'll affect the game. The Jaguars could go, no, you know what, in this case, given what their roster makeup is and how their offense or defense functions, we're going to play him 95% snaps defense, and he's only going to get, you know, 5 or 6 snaps on offense. And so they're going to use him very much situationally as they see fit, or at least that's the idea of what they would like to do.
So, Charles, there is a Netflix series coming out with the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, and there was a premiere event that they had this week. We talked about this on the show a little bit yesterday, where Jerry Jones got up there and basically said, yeah, you know, the Cowboys are a soap opera, so when it gets slow, I'll stir some things up. Which, you know, we were talking about, like, great, if you're a player in that locker room, it's like, oh, so you're just, like, fully committed to the circus. Like, let's just embrace the circus here and what that does to a locker room. But you've got an interesting take on the Micah Parsons part of this and how that approach from Jerry Jones could be affecting what we're seeing right now.
Well, Robbie, first off, how dare you disrespect one of the greatest quotes in history of NFL owners? Like, how could you not just read the quote verbatim? That is literally one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard in 25 years.
Should we do it in the Jerry voice?
Look, like, all these owners and GMs and coaches, they're all, you know, keep it quiet. You don't want outside noise. You don't want distraction. Like, you know, let's focus. Quiet is good. All this stuff. And you get Jerry walking the red carpet for this Netflix event. And he says, well, I do believe we're not being looked at. I'll do my part to get us looked at. The beautiful thing for networks, or if you will, streaming companies, is that the NFL is a 365-day a year interest factor. A lot of programming, you have to spend as much as you promote as you do to make it. The Cowboys are a soap opera 365 days a year. And when it gets slow, I'll stir it up. It's wonderful to have the great athletes, have the great players, but there's something more there. There's sizzle. There's emotion. And if you will, there's controversy. That controversy is good stuff in terms of keeping and having people's attention. Oh, my nice. God.
That's, like, that's a heck of a quote there.
Jerry.
Nice voice.
This dude is just, I'm like, that is one of the wildest things I have ever heard an owner say. Basically, like, hey, man, if it gets too quiet, like, it reminded me, I told someone, I said, if you ever saw, what was the Will Ferrell movie, the NASCAR, Ricky Bobby, right?
Oh, yeah.
Talladega Nights. He had the dad who was like, he like, when everything was going good, he's like, yeah, it makes me itchy. he talked about wanting to get thrown out of an Applebee's when things get too good. Like, this feels like what Jerry's like. And I think what was crazy is, so as I've gone on the camp tour, you know, I've been asking, like, GMs, other executives, especially guys who have been involved in big mega trades, you know, what do you think Mike is worth? Like, give me an idea. Dial me in. And they go back to the Khalil Mack deal in 2018. And, you know, it's sort of like, hey, two firsts plus a really good starter. Or, you know, hey, you could probably push for three firsts with the right team. And I'm sitting with one GM, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but he says to me at one point, he's like, You don't think this has anything to do with, like, the Netflix thing, right? And I'm like, and you know, he's sort of basically like, what if Jerry knows he's going to pay Micah? He knows he's going to write the $160 million, you know, guaranteed check or whatever it is, $120 million, $140 million, whatever gets it done, guaranteed money. And he knows he's going to pay him 45 annual average value. And the Cowboys have written checks to you know, resolve feelings before, right? And it's always worked. So Jerry knows that. And what if Jerry basically is like, hey, I got this Netflix premiere on August 19th. I'm going to go ahead and sit on my hands and, you know, I'll be all over the place when it comes to the Micah negotiation. And it's going to get us a lot of attention. It's crazy, like, to me, and it's dangerous and it's all kinds of wild, but he did just say that.
I was about to say, is it crazy? He just said that. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
Right, he did just say that quote. And, by the way, if that was his goal, the Cowboys are always in the A block, right? Anyway, it's just how it is, especially nationally. But this has been different. And this is, it was like Andrew Siciliano and I were talking about this on the podcast. Andrew kind of pushed back and said, you know, hey, we always talk about the Cowboys. I'm like, yeah, but Andrew, there's never been a Netflix premiere that the owner's poured the last 2+ years, almost 3 years of his life into, coming out in the middle of it. That, by the way, is sort of his opus and telling and shaping his story and how he's going to look. There's never been that in the middle of it. And this Micah thing has kept the Cowboys not just in A block, but B block, C block. It gets talked about all day long. There's multiple news cycles of it. They have been the story, I would argue, of training camp, the Micah thing has with the Cowboys. And if that is something that really happened here, and I would argue that if we have this show in 2 or 3 weeks and they just write the check and it's all done and everything's fine and everybody's happy and they move on, I would argue that that feeds into the idea that maybe this was a setup, that maybe there was some purpose behind why this has gone this way and been so weird.
I mean, this is one of those things that, like, you know, typically I would just dismiss. It just sounds too
right.
ridiculous. But I actually totally believe it. It totally makes sense.
It's the
which
one,
is sad.
Like
but,
Frank,
I mean,
Frank Schwab and I were Frank Schwab and I were talking about it, and he was like, look, he's like, yeah, it's nuts. It's completely insane. But if there's one guy, there's one person that would do it, it's this guy. And, I mean, like, the title of the Netflix series, what is it, America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys?
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, this is just too – it's kind of too perfect. And, you know, I was talking to somebody in-house at Yahoo that, you know, does some of the metrics on – what PR value is worth. And I think Jerry believes there's no bad PR. Like if you're out there and it's not for just, you know, a felony, it's a good thing. If people are talking about you, especially if it's just controversy, contracts, stuff like that. I mean, he has drummed up $100 million worth of PR on this Micah thing over the last 3 weeks. I mean, it's been on every single show, it's been eating up podcast time. We're talking about it on the radio. Like it's just, if there, as Frank said, if there's a guy, this is the guy who would do it. And by the way, he said he would do it.
Pretty much told us. So Charles, what kind of bombshells are we talking about potentially here with this Gruden lawsuit? I mean, we're gonna get in discovery a lot more emails, right? What kind of stuff are we gonna find out? And what do you think? I mean, I know Gruden just said like he died a coach. I feel like he's gonna be a college coach, but what do you think about like his future in the NFL as a coach?
Well, it's interesting because the NFL kind of got dealt. I mean, they got whacked on this with the Nevada Supreme Court. You know, basically saying, hey, not basically, they're saying it should go to trial, and and also the Brian Flores, the appellate court, saying, I mean, you know, you have a state court and then a federal court saying your arbitration system, coaches should not be forced to go through your arbitration systems, in particular when it's something this big. And the fingers are pointed at Roger Goodell, who, if it was to go to your arbitration decision, would be your arbitrator, effectively. They're like, that can't be allowed to happen. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal for both the Gruden and Flores lawsuit. I think for the Gruden one in particular, you ask yourself two questions. Like at the beginning, when I would talk to people close to John, they were like, it's scorched earth. They're like, because I'm like, they're going to write a check eventually, right? And they're like, John's rich. He doesn't want the money. He wants blood. He wants to absolutely burn 345 Park Avenue to the ground. And I wonder if that's changed now over time. I don't know if it has or hasn't. So that's the first question. And I think the second question is, would the NFL ultimately write that check if they get to the point where you got to move in for discovery? There's something really there's something damaging in there waiting for you. And I would tend to think it's who leaked the emails, right? Like that's the big deal. Everyone wants to know who is the leaker and how did the leak happen? Was there direction given from Roger or anyone else inside the organization? Like that's the super juicy stuff, is like basically nailing, you know, the person who got the initial foray of stuff out there. And, you know, the idea that the NFL won't write a check, that's really not true, because look, they settled Kaepernick, right? They settled Jim Trotter. You know, there have been situations where they felt inclined to write a check to just resolve something. This one is a little different because you have a guy who could be defiant and say, I don't want the check. I think it's for me, us, I think everybody, I think it's in our interest from the drama standpoint to see this go. I'm a little reluctant as a reporter to sit here and go, yeah, somebody's going to get exposed as a whistleblower, you know, inside the machine. Because those emails, I don't know, man. I'm glad I know the content of those emails. Once I saw them, I'm like, whether he had a job or not, this is pertinent to, you know, I think the guy's mindset. I'm glad I know that, you know, this is stuff that was said and, you know, it went back and forth. And, but again, you know, if it's Roger at the top directing this, maybe people have a right to know that too, or at the very least Gruden from a legal standpoint thus far has proven he has a right to know more than he knows now. So this is rough, and I think it's going to change. It has to change the way the NFL's arbitration system works with coaches, because the coaches have said, we're not subject to this. You can't force us to go in your arbitration system. The league has said that's not true. Covers you guys too. Covers everybody. And now they're going to have to fix that in some way, because this shows that it can definitely be penetrated by court cases on both the federal and state level.
Charles, last thing for you here, a couple quarterback injuries I want to get your thoughts on. Number one, Shedeur Sanders, not going to play in the preseason game this weekend.
Yeah.
How big a deal is that going to be for the rest of the preseason? And then also Jordan Love having surgery on his non-throwing hand before the season began. Looks like he's going to be ready for week one, but just your thoughts on both of those guys.
Well, Shedeur, you know, the oblique injury, I mean, those can linger for sure. So that could be a big problem for them. You know, losing the second exhibition game alone is damaging for him. And I've told people, we're looking at this wrong. This was what he's done in the preseason and what he would have continued to do was never geared toward really moving him up the depth chart. It was geared toward, can he plant a seed? And I would say it's the same with Dylan Gabriel. Can he plant a seed so that when we get into the regular season, if we get to the point where Flacco is just completely ineffective, we have to make a change, or we're out of the playoffs, or we have to make some kind of a decision at the quarterback spot, can he plant a seed to put himself in the middle of that conversation? Same with Dylan Gabriel. And through one game, he definitely had. I think that first game against Carolina, he showed, you know, hey, I have ability. I'm a gamer. I've, you know, had some comfort level. Wasn't perfect, you know, through some near picks, hospital balls. He had some bad throws, but it was something. Gave them some traction. They looked at him a lot of different ways. Now you take him off the field. I think there's a chance he might not play in, you know, in a significant part of the rest of the preseason. So it's a blow for him for sure, because it affects not only the snaps he would have gotten, but where he places himself in the mind of management and the coaching staff when decisions could ultimately need to be made in November, December, whatever. And as far as Jordan Love, look, yeah, he'll be back for the regular season. That's their belief. But the wide receiver position is all mixed there. Like, they're still trying to figure that out, which to me means maybe beyond the two tight ends. I think, I think they feel good at the tight end spot, but the wide receivers are still trying to figure out that chemistry. This hurts. Him not being out there hurts. And in a weird way, I look at the NFC North now, and I'm like, man, every team kind of has – you know, J.J. McCarthy's up and down with the Vikings right now. Caleb Williams, they're throwing the kitchen sink at him, and he's having a really hard time with it. And so we don't really know how well is he going to handle this offense when the season starts. Now you got Jordan Love, who's going to miss a significant number of at least chemistry snaps in practice with these wide receivers. And then, you know, you got the Lions, where you're like, what's going to happen with the loss of the coaches with Frank Ragnow? Like, will that still ultimately look the same? We all had this, at least I had this idea where I'm like, man, the NFC North is just all monsters. And now I'm kind of like, ooh, man, I don't know. There's some problems here and there for these teams, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it manifests. So not good, for Green Bay when it comes to sorting out the wide receivers, where I would defy you guys to tell me who the one is there. I still have no clue when I look at that batch.
I think they're hoping like crap it's Matthew Golden, but that, you're talking about a guy that's never played a game.
Yeah, right. And again, don't you think he profiles out as a two?
Yes.
I think a lot of people in the league will tell you that. Yeah, he profiles, he could be a good two. Okay, well, if he's a good two, he's not a one. And if Christian Watson was your one, he's never on the field, or he's very, he's hurt constantly. They have some things I think that they should be worrying about right now, and it's unfortunate because I think there's no doubt the talent's there. They got to have a clean camp, and particularly with the quarterback being available. And he gets nicked up a lot. I feel like am I wrong about that?
No.
Does it feel like Jordan Love is hurt a lot?
Yes. It's started to become a huge problem. There's no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, Robbie, you would know. So is it like you got to be frustrated?
Very frustrated.
This situation? But you know what? Aaron's not looking great in Pittsburgh right now.
It's true.
Maybe there was no real resolution to the Aaron Jordan Love debate at this stage.
That is true. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Hope you get to feeling better. Thanks for powering through and being with us, and we will talk to you next week.
I appreciate it, but you're not. I real quick, I got to ask you guys. So, what's everybody saying about Cam Ward now? There, like, I'm curious what the vibe is. Like, what's what are your callers and listeners? What are people saying?
Well, the entire operation doesn't look very good right now. I think there's real concern about like just how bad this team could be. The one thing that the biggest positive right now, which I think it may end up being the most important thing of the whole thing, is Ward and Ridley look really good together, and that may end up being the only thing that anybody cares about at the end of the year.
Yeah, good sign that he clearly looks for that guy. Like that, if you'd ask me, like, hey, who do you want him to dial in on? I'd be like, yeah, Ridley. That would be great if that became a thing.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good week, all right?
Yes, sir. Feel better, buddy.
You as well. Charles Robinson joins us every week here on the program from Yahoo Sports. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Coming up next, we got Teron Davenport at 8:15. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.